Morning, everyone. Today's Daf Mabinsia is Ayin Dalet. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsoring the Daf. Daf is learning with Chanish Masliba, Gabriel Lavas Shmuel. We are starting today on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. We're about almost halfway down on the Amud. We start today. Besura. Okay, let's get right into it. The discussion of ribis and various permutations of ribis. The Gemara is going to treat us with a lot of bits and pieces of Gemaras that have to do with possible ribis issues. Besura says la ba'arba arba. So in Surah you can get your dollar can buy you 4 sa'ah of wheat. And b'kafri aslan shisa shisa. Now if you go to kafri you can get 6. So obviously you'll get more for your money in kafri. So Yav Rav Zuzi lechamri v'kaba ala unsa dorcha v'shakel minar chamisha. So the Gemara says, so what Rav did is that he gave money to the chamarim, to the donkey drivers, and he fronted them the money, and he sent them over to Kafre, so he can get more purchasing power with his money. So what he's doing, like we discussed at the tail end of yesterday, is he's fronting somebody money with the expectation that he's going to get it back. Now, generally speaking, you are buying at a discount. But if you're prepaying, and because of the fact that you're prepaying, you're buying at a discount, so it may end up becoming a ribis consideration. Now, yesterday, if you remember, we pointed out that there were a couple ways to justify such an action. A couple points that we made yesterday. One is that if your shuttlers, if your couriers, your managers, if you will, who are taking the money, so if they're given certain privileges, so then they are getting some sort of advantage with that money that was fronted to them. So under those circumstances, we could say that that may offset the ribis issues. So for example, we said two things yesterday. One is that if with the money they get certain privileges and rights, certain buying privileges, certain buying rights, so then that may offset the ribis issue. Two is that if they can turn to the supplier and say, look, we were fronted the money, and because we were fronted the money, so we had to take a discount, you're going to give us a discount as well. So that's also another very real financial benefit that they receive for getting fronted the money. Rav over here actually went one step even further. As I read already, but now I'm going to translate, Kibalav Unsa Darcha. So he accepted upon himself responsibility for anything that happens over the course of the journey. So that means that the item does not belong to him, or I should say better, the item immediately belongs to him the moment that it's bought. So over here, so it makes it even better. Rashi comments over here that he may not even need to go that far, but he wanted to be even more strict upon himself that he didn't violate any type of ribis consideration. And now, shakel min al-chamisha. So the Gemara says so. With the zuz that he sent with the couriers to go to Kafri in order to buy, so he bought, but he only bought 6 sa'ah per dollar, he only bought 5 sa'ah per dollar, not 6 sa'ah per dollar. And the obvious question is, Rav obviously lost a little bit, meaning he sent to Kafri, the going rate of the wheat in Kafri was 6, and he only bought it at 5. So the Gemara says, Vinishkal Shisa, that's Gemara's question. So Adam Chashuv Shani answers the Gemara. Rav was an Adam Chashuv, he was a significant individual, and he didn't want to get greedy, and he didn't want, even though there was no ribis issue, he offset the ribis issue, but nevertheless he wanted to be a little bit more meticulous with his action and with his performance over here of the and is following the halacha of ribis, so therefore he only took it 5 sa. Can I do the same thing with scrap metal? Can we prepay somebody, a courier, to go somewhere and buy scrap metal? So what would be the difference between buying wheat and buying scrap metal? If I'm prepaying and I'm getting a discount, and we just said under certain circumstances it would be okay, so why would it be any different regarding scrap metal? To which Rashi points out, it may be different for the following reason. Rashi writes, Rashi is lower than we are in the Gemara. Me Amrinan, I'm reading in the middle of the Rashi, about two lines down in the Rashi, of Mal Lassos. So me Amrinan, Tvua Demide Deshchichu, De Azleva Ase Kol Shaita. So Amrinan Nichala, Nichu Demiglitara. wheat, which is so popular and everyone sells wheat, so therefore we could talk about buying in bulk, getting special privileges, having them open the gate for you, having them reduce the price, meaning there is room to negotiate when it comes to wheat. Aval shar pragmatia, but if you're talking about any other type of commodity, like a gilui tara, velo uzli gabayu, you see, you don't have that kind of buying power when it comes to scrap metal. And so you can't give the, you can't force them to give you special privileges. You can't force them to give you a discount. So maybe this is what the Gemara's consideration is that you are now getting a discount because you're prepaying, and there's nothing offsetting the ribbis issue. So maybe it would be different. That's the question of the Gemara. So the Gemara's answer, very clear. So Amalei Bikesh Rav Yishmael B'Rav Yosef Lassos Kain, B'Kli Pishtam V'Lo Inichu Rabbi. So Rabbi Yishmael B'Rav Yosef wanted to do this, prepaid for the scrap, for linen, again, anything other than wheat, and Rebbe didn't allow to do so. Igadamin, a slightly different version of who the parties that were involved in this was because Rebbe Lassos Begrutos. Rebbe wanted to buy scrap metal at a discounted price. Velo hiniach Rebbe Shmuel B'Rav Yosef, and Rebbe Shmuel B'Rav Yosef did not allow him to do so. Par Deisa. Next question of the Gemara. Okay, you go to a vineyard. Right now, the grapes are real small, just developing, just ripening. And what you want to do is you want to lay down money so that you can buy wine. Okay, but the wine is later down the road. And Rashi writes over here, Lokin Echad, I'm reading the Rashi, Lokin Echad Shehein Boser Osmadar Avadar Lo Igil Abikor. So you're buying them at a really early stage of development with the, now it's not a Devar Shel Bal Olam, it's here, it's just, you know, it needs time to develop and ripen. So can I pay at an early price, locking into a really early rate, and again, a ribbis consideration, because you're paying at such an early stage, and you're going to get a discount, and so now somebody else is holding your money, and you're going to benefit from that time. So that's a ribbis consideration. So Rav Asar Shmuel Shari, so Machlok is Rav, and Shmuel, Rav says no. Shmuel says you could do it. Rav Asar, Kevin Delakame, Shavya Tvei Mischazi Kaga Nataluhu, Natalei. So Rav says exactly what we just said. Think of the consideration that somebody's holding your money. I'm paying less as a result of that. I'm getting more later down the road. That's Nata Agar. That is reward for somebody holding my money, me getting rewarded. So that's Max Aribis. So Rav says he can't do that. Ushmul Shari Kevin Dechazibay Tihave Lo Mechse Ki Aganatarlay. And Shmuel says no. Why? Because explain to Gemara on behalf of Shmuel, because look, it may turn into wine. It may not. It may sour, it may spoil. There's a risk involved. So by me prepaying, even though yes, I'm getting a cheaper rate, but at the same time, I may not get anything. So there's risk involved. And like we've said many times, you factor risk into the price. So I'm paying less, but I'm also taking upon myself risk. Once there is risk involved, and once I'm assuming the risk, so then there's no problem. So that would be in defense of Shmuel. Rav Shimi Barchia, Umodi Rav, Beturi de Nafish Psadaihu. So the Gemara says, look, this argument that we just gave on behalf of Shmuel, obviously, Rav disagrees, but not fundamentally. Meaning, it's a very good point. If you're taking on risk, and you're paying less because you're taking on the risk, so then it's not a ribbis issue. So here's where Rav is going to agree to Shmuel. Rav is going to agree to Shmuel is that if we have cows plowing the field, so then that means then that the chances that the grapes are not going to get into wine are really high. So by you now paying an early price, locking into an early rate, but assuming that kind of risk, that would be fine. Even Rav would agree to Shmuel that under those circumstances it would be okay. Amlu Shmuel Lahanu Dishabashi Shabisha. Okay, Shmuel tells the people who are doing the following with their sharecroppers. Sharecroppers are working the field for the year and they're going to split the yield. The sharecroppers, however, in this particular scenario, so they need capital, and in this case, capital means seeds. So the sharecropper goes over to the landowner and says, "Would you lend us the seeds?" you know, we'll do all the work, etc., etc., and we'll pay you back for the seeds. Not with seeds, but we'll pay you back commensurate to the value of the seeds. Now, as we will be discussing in tomorrow's daf, this is an issue of sa'abasah. Now, sa'abasah, we talked about many times. If I'm lending you a commodity and you're returning me back commodity, so it's a concern of ribbis. It is avak ribbis. It's asamid derabanan. So, what Shmuel now is going to tell the sharecroppers is, here's what you could do. So, what you'll do is you work the land, you'll acquire a piece of the land, the ilo haviluchu bahava v'aser. So, by working the land, acquiring the land, so that somehow, I don't fully understand this, I'm going to be honest, somehow that makes you now not a borrower, but a partner, and being now a partner, so therefore it avoids the issue of sa basa. Masha enkin, if you just borrow the seed and you paid back with a commodity, so then it violates the issue of sa basa. Amalu rava lana demantir bage. Rabbi said to the people who were guarding the land, "Poku afuchu beveidari." So here's what you're going to do: you're going to turn over the. You're going to go and do some work together with the for the landowner. Because here's the issue. The issue is as follows, and this is how Rashi presents it. These guards who are guarding the field, so they're scheduled to guard from. Let's just say to make this clear, let's say that their guarding term is a 1 month position. Okay, again, the numbers are arbitrary over here. I'm just making the point. And then at that point in time, now their job is done and they're not expected to get paid. However, what the concern is over here is that if they don't get paid right away, but rather the employer says to them, why don't we do the following? Wait till you get paid, and when you do, you'll get a bonus. Okay, so in other words, well, the employer asked if we could delay payment, and by doing so, you'll get more. Again, this is an issue of ribbis, because once their employment is over, and once they're due the money, so anything they get above that at a later point in time is going to be a ribbis consideration. So what he is advising them to do is continue doing some sort of nominal work so that your employment does not come to an official end. And under those circumstances, now, when you get paid a later time and you get paid a little bit extra, this is not going to be a violation of ribbis. So that's what he says. So, adai shaita, the scarce item, shalom el b'sof, because when it comes to wages, wages get paid at the end of your employment. Vayishaita, ozulid dika mozli gabayu. And the fact that they're getting a little bump, a little bonus for have waited, that's not a problem of ribbis, because he didn't owe you the money previously, and the fact that you're getting a little bit more right now, okay, so that's fine. Amalei Rabbanan l'Rava. The rabbis made the following accusation to Rava, ka'achomar ribbis. You know, Rava, it's a straightforward accusation. You are enjoying the benefits of interest. He's an Amora. It's kind of hard to imagine that the accusation is A, true, and B, accurate. The kuli amashak le'arba umisalke la'arisa benisa. Here's what everyone does. Everyone takes four sa'a and excuses their sharecroppers in the month of Nisan. And what do you do? Mar natalahu adiyar. So you wait a little bit longer. You hold on to the money for an additional month. Vishakul shisa. And then what you do is you take six. So in other words, by holding out a little bit longer, so you're taking a little bit extra. So an accusation to Rava that you should be taking four, and meanwhile you wait and you take six, and doesn't that smack of ribbis? So Amalu Atun Kavdison Shalokidin. So Rava turns around to them and says, no. In fact, not only did I not take advantage of, and did I not violate the Isra ribbis, but just the opposite. Over here, I'm doing proper business practice, and you guys are not. Why? Because Ara La Ariz Mishtabed, because the sharecroppers are expected to work and hold on to the and to work the land for a certain amount of time. E Asun Misalikta Lahu Benisan. Now what you guys do is you say to the sharecroppers, okay guys, everything up until Nisan, and then at Nisan, you guys now are excused. There's only a certain amount of crop that comes in by the month of Nisan. There's still more coming in the course of the springtime. So now, mafsidu lehu bekama. So therefore, by excusing your sharecroppers off the field by a certain point in time, so you're really limiting and capping the amount of sharecropping they can actually do. Anna, but Rava says, but as far as I'm concerned, not trying to lehu adiyar, I tell my sharecroppers to stay until the month of Iyar, giving them more crop to share, and then umavachna lehu bekama. So obviously, there's more sharecropping, and therefore there's more to take from there. So I'm not violating the Isser Ribbis. In fact, just the opposite. I'm allowing the sharecroppers to stay longer, to share more. I'm perfectly in the right over here. We're on the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. We're on the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Beis, and a number of punctuated points of the Gemara. One, Rav Mari bar Rachel. Rav Mari, the son of Rachel. Now, he has a father, right? Yes, that's correct. He does. So, who's dad? So, this comes up a couple of times throughout Shas. Rashi over here on the top of the Amud says, Bas Shmuel Hava. Rav Mari's mother was the daughter of Shmuel. So this is Shmuel's grandson. And Rashi points out, we've heard this numerous times throughout Shas, we heard this at the end of Ksuvos. So V'nishbeis, I'm reading Rashi, V'nishbeis, and she unfortunately was taken into captivity, V'nasa nachri, V'nizgaya. So she married a non-Jew during her captivity, and he converted. Ushmei Isar Giura. So his name was Isar. V'Rav Mari, but unfortunately, we have a little bit of information, maybe more than we need to know. But the conception happened while he was not Jewish, and the birth happened after he converted. And to provide him a little bit more honor, so he goes after his mother's name, not after his father's name. Okay. So Mari Barachal. So Mashkan Le'anachri Besa. So he was given as a pledge for a loan that he handed out, a property that belonged to a non-Jew. Now, generally speaking, we talked about pledged properties before in our parak. It's been a big topic. And with a pledged property, so you, the lender, who is now assuming not ownership, but command of the property, so you get to enjoy the property over the course of the loan. Now, when I say enjoy the property, isn't that an issue of ribbis? It sure is, but let's keep in mind, the borrower in this case is a non-Jew, so there's no ribbis concern whatsoever. In other words, he can enjoy the property to whatever degree he'd like to. So, so he was given a house. So over here, enjoyment comes in the form of rent. In this case, free rent of the house. So how does Avne l'Rava? Now, what the non-Jew then did is he turned around and he sold the property to Rava. Now, I don't know how much due diligence Rava did before buying the property. Because as we're about to learn in just a moment, Rava did not know that the property was currently pledged for a loan. So, okay, he didn't do much due diligence. So how does Zvan l'Rava? So not to trace a Yachishasa. So now a year goes by. And then, Shakal Agar Beise. In year two, so now remember, Rav Mari is a lender of this non-Jew, and he's now been sitting on this property. For the first year, he didn't give any rent whatsoever, even though the property now was currently owned by Rava. And then, in year two, he now started paying rent. Now, had the property still been owned by the non-Jew, he would continue living in the property rent-free. Again, there's no issue of interest because the borrower in this case is a non-Jew. But the property now was sold to Rava, so now Rav Mari felt uncomfortable to live in it rent-free, and so therefore he started paying Rava rent. The question we're going to ask is, well, the sale took place during year one. Why only in year two did he start fronting the rent? So the Gemara asks this question. So So he now presents the rent to Rava for year two. So now he explains his behavior. Why didn't I pay rent for the first year? Remember, we did this earlier in the parak. When you're pledged the property, so you now know that at least for the first year, you are going to be able to benefit from that property, and the owner of that property cannot redeem his property within the first year. So at least you know for the first year you're good. And again, let's remember, the borrower in this case was a non-Jew, so here, no problem whatsoever for him to live in the house rent-free. Now, if the non-Jew wanted to excuse me from the land, he couldn't do so for the first year, so I know first year I was good. But now, it's year two, he hasn't redeemed the property yet, but now you're the owner of the property. Now, did he have to pay the rent? I'm not sure. I'm not sure what kind of obligation he had.
Are we assuming that his original loan was paid up?
No, it was not.
But
that, no, that we know for sure was not. It was not paid up. And the Gemara is going to spell it out in just a moment. So the Gemara says, so for Hashta Lishkomar Agarbeisi. So do me a favor. Now that you're the owner of the property, congratulations. So I'm going to pay you rent from year two and onward. So Amar Lei, Ihavi Adana Dehavim Mimashkan Lei. And so Rava says, whoa, I didn't know all this about the property. I didn't know the property was currently pledged while I bought it. So, and if I know that, so Mimashkan Lamar Lo Havas Vinale. So I wouldn't have bought it. Hashta Bidine Mavdina Lacha. So Rava says, so I'll tell you what. Now that I've learned that this property was pledged, and you are the pledge holder of the property, so now I'll tell you that I'm going to give you a break. Call Amos Alamistaka Bizuze Lo Shaga Agabesa. In their court system, the way it works is that even when a pledged property is sold, the pledge holder can continue to live on the property rent-free until the property is redeemed, until the borrower satisfies the obligation. So Rava says to Rav Murray, I'm going to do accordingly. Ananami lo shakina megar agabesei ad masakan lebezuze. I'm not going to charge any rent until he pays it up. The Gemara describes it as this is how they would do it in their court system. Now, again, did Rava have to follow this? It sounds like the way the Gemara presents it, no, not necessarily, but he didn't know that the property was pledged. He felt bad for Rav Murray because Rav Murray, had he not bought the property, Rav Murray certainly would have continued living in the house rent-free. So he said, okay, I'll cut you a break. That's certainly the way it seems like it's being presented. Okay, next, number two. Amrle Rava mi barnish la Ravashi. Rava says the following to Ravashi. Chazi mar rabbana deka achle rebisa. Once again, an accusation is flying that the rabbis are enjoying interest. Di avizuze achamra betishrei. So what they do is that they give the they pay for the wine in the month of Tishrei. So once again, they're prepaying for their wine. And umevachru lu beteves. And in the winter they come, and they pick out the best wines that are there. And so what they're doing is, presumably, in the month of Tishrei, in the fall, so the wine prices are very cheap. That's the beginning of the season. Some wines are good, some wines are bad, but by Teves, so basically the only wines that are left there or that are there are good, and so they prepaid at a discount, took a later point in time, so it sounds like ribis. Amalahu inonami achamer kayave. And the response is no. When they bought the wine in the month of Tishrei, they bought wine. They didn't pay for vinegar. And even from the very beginning, no wine became vinegar. The wine in Tishrei was wine, and the vinegar in Tishrei was vinegar. And nothing changed. So even though they only pick it up at a later point in time, truth be told, they could have picked it up in Tishrei. And so therefore, there is no benefit that they received just because they paid in Tishrei. Third story. Ravina havayav zuzalivnei. Livnei akra deshanvasa v'shavchulei tfei kufisa. So Ravina would give money to the to this particular group, and as he prepaid, and at a later point in time, he got an extra barrel of wine. Okay, a little bonus at the end. So Azla kamed Ravashi amalei misharei. So now the question goes over to Ravashi. Wait 1 second. He prepaid, and he got. Now the truth of the matter is,
purchase, not a loan.
It's a purchase, And there was no clear stipulation at the beginning that he was going to get a bonus. The bonus that came at the end was just simply a gift. And that's exactly what Rav Ashi says. He says it was mechila, meaning it was just simply a, I'm so pleased that you're my customer. I'm just going to give you a bonus at the end. It's fine. Amalei ha ara lavdi duhu. Now the Gemara says, now let's take one more thing into consideration. You know, it's great that he bought wine from this particular group of people. These particular group of people are not the most ethical people. I'm concerned that the land does not belong to them, that they stole the land. And so basically what you're buying is stolen property. Amalahu. So once again, Rav Ashi says, that doesn't bother me as well. Arla taska mishabda. The land is taxable land. The king is the one who is collecting tax on the land. Umaka ama mandi av taska. The king will decide who the land is going to belong to based on who's ever paying the tax. Mandi av taska lechol ara. Who's ever paying the tax is going to enjoy the land. So, no, they didn't steal the land. Yes, there may have been a previous owner, and yes, the previous owner did not pay taxes, and yes, they paid the taxes for this property, and therefore the king made the decision that the land belongs to them. So no, they did not steal the land, and yes, everything now checks out. It's not a ribbis concern, it's not a stolen property concern. Rav Ashi was comfortable. Amli Rav Papa l'Rava, Chazi Mar Hani Rabban and Diavi Zuze. So Rav Papa says to Rava, I know a particular group of Chachamim that they gave money a karga, and what they did is that they paid the karga. Karga is a head tax. Right? In the Gemara, right, we for sure see property tax, we see head tax. Now, what they do, these group of people do, is they pay the head tax on behalf of other people. A karga de'inshi, umishab de behutfei. And as a result of paying the head tax of people, various people, people who they themselves could not afford paying that tax, so basically now you owe me because I paid your head tax. And what they did is that they employ these people. Now I may be using a soft language in describing the employment over here. It may be true, but they employ the people because they pay for the head tax. So Amalei Hashta Iku Shavichol Amalechu Hamilsa. And Rav Papa says something a little bit morbid, but it's true. He says, you know, if I would have died, and we never had this discussion, so then you wouldn't have heard me say the following. So it's good that you're asking me now. Okay, admittedly, slightly morbid, but it's true. So Hachem Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes made a statement to this point, and that is, Mehorkayu da'ani betafsa damalka manach. So as far as the seal of the king, it is on the the seal of the king is within the king, is withhold, being held by the king, meaning the king of the land has the rights to collect tax from every person. And Omaka Amar Mandalo Yavkarga Lishabila Mandi Yavkarga. And the king said very clearly that if you're not paying taxes and someone is fronting the money for you, so now you have certain rights over that person. Now again, what are we talking about over here? Slavery, employment. I'm not sure, the Gemara is not making the point perfectly clear, but you have certain rights over that person when you're fronting the head tax of that person. Also, I'm just curious, again, Gemara doesn't give us a lot of information over here. Are we talking about the Jewish people? Presumably. Okay. Next, number five. Rav Sa'aram Achud Rava. So Rav Sa'aram was the brother of Rava. Havatakifin Shidolo Ma'alom. So what he would do is he would force people to work for him. They were not they were not people with the best of reputation. Umalalahu Biguharka de Rava. And they basically had them working on behalf of his brother Rava. Okay, so he took people who had poor reputations, just not the best of people, and he worked them. So Amalei Rava Shapakavadati de Tanina. And Rava says, yeah, you could do that. So we learned together in a Braisa. Reita She'ino Noe Kishura Minayin Shata Rashai Lihishta Beidbo. If a person is acting improperly, so you can oversee him and you can have him do work for you. Now again, I don't know, there's just not a lot of information over here. Who has the right to do so? Who's overseeing all this? Again, The Gemara over here is really sparse in the amount of information. So, Tamalomar la'olam em tavodu uva achechem. Right, you can have them employ, you can have them work for you, and even with your brothers as well. Meaning, if they are conducting themselves in a way that is inappropriate, so then you can have them work for you. Right, it's like a chain gang, if you will. So yachal afilo noa kashura. Now, what if they do behave properly? So then no tamlamar v'achechem in Israel ish pachiv. You're not allowed to have a Jew who is conducting himself appropriately to work for you without an employment contract. Without, in other words, you can't just have them doing work for you. Amrav chama haiman diayv zuzi lechavre lemizman lechavre. Let's say, says Rav Chama, this is no longer a story, but rather just various halachas that are said over now. So Rav Chama says that if a person gives money over to his friend in order to buy wine, okay. So shlichus, it's just a simple, it's a simple mission. I give you money. I know there's a great buying opportunity. You'll take my money and you'll buy wine for me. Now, upash of lo zavenlei. Now the person who was given the money, who was sent on the mission, meaning the shliach, he was poshe, he was negligent. He didn't buy the wine. So mishayim lei. So now the shliach over here agreed to buy wine, had the buying opportunity, was negligent and did not buy the and did not make a use of the buying opportunity, and therefore he now, the shliach, is on the hook to provide for the mishaleach wine that you could buy in the port of Zushafat. Meaning, you got to compensate for that lost opportunity. So, Amar Meimar, Amisa Lishmaita Kamed Rav Zvid, Minar Dana. I said this over in the name of Rav Zvid, in front of Rav Zvid. Amar Kikamar Chamar Hanimili, Beyain Stam. Ava Beyain Zeh, Lo. Now, let's make the following distinction, says Rav Zvid. I think that the only time that the Shliach is going to be negligent and liable is only if his instructions was to buy wine. But if his instructions were to buy specific wine, then he's not going to be liable. Because even if he would have gone, and even if he went to the he went for this buying opportunity, who's to say that that actual wine is going to be there? So yes, he was negligent, and yes, he should have gone there to begin with, but we don't know if he really missed an opportunity, as opposed to if the instructions were just to buy wine without being specific. So then, yeah. So then, I feel he's going to be responsible. I feel he's going to be liable. So me, Yemen de Mizavna in the Ale. Ravashi, Amar Ravashi says, look, I'm going to go one step further. Obviously, the shliach, he shirked his responsibility, and he was poshe and he was negligent. But he did come back with the money, and he handed back the money. And I don't think he's going to have to reimburse you with that cheap wine under any circumstance. Why? I feel he ain't sami namilo. My time asmachta he vasmachta lo kanya, because this falls under the category of asmachta, meaning that when the shliach took your money and said, "I'm going to buy the wine for you," so and even if he said, and it was contracted that if I don't buy the wine for you, I'm going to reimburse you for that missed opportunity, I think this falls under the category of asmachta. Now the Gemara says, now why? Now, I'm sorry. Now, we'll get to the wine in just a moment. But asmachta means is that even when I commit myself to something, if it's hyperbole, if it's exaggeration, so then both parties understand that it was just that. Hyperbole and exaggeration. To which the Gemara says, well, Rashi, my shnami hadidnan. So really, it falls under the category of asmachta. We are going to see later in the Masechta, where the sharecropper says to the landowner, I'd like to bid to be a sharecropper in your property. And in my bid, I'm going to write down on the contract that if I do not work your land over the course of the year, and I do not produce a yield, so I'm going to reimburse you for that lost opportunity. And later we're going to learn that such a sharecropper is in fact going to be liable if he doesn't work the land. So the Gemara now asks a really simple question. So you see that when you make a commitment to do something and you fail to do so based on your own negligence, you're going to be responsible, financially responsible. So now, what's the difference between the case of the sharecropper we're going to see later in the Masechta versus our case over here where the guy was given money to buy wine?
Big difference.
So the Gemara says there's a difference. Hasam biyado, hachalav biyado. So the Gemara over here says there's a big difference. When it comes to the buying of wine, you are not in control of all the factors. You may go there. You may have the money. But who's to say that there's wine to buy? So if you don't have the all control of the factors, so when you made the commitment and said, and if I falter, I'm going to pay, it's understood that that's exaggeration, that's hyperbole, because you cannot guarantee the purchase of wine. Even if you do everything right, there may not be wine. Masha Inke.
The guy could have bought them the one himself.
Masha Inke. That's another thing. But the Gemara over here is making this fundamental point. Masha Inke, when it comes to the sharecropper, when given the contract to work the land, now everything is within his control. Now, I understand that there are factors that may prevent the crop from growing. But in other words, but if he didn't even give it a try, if he didn't even work the land, so that's something that was within his control, and therefore he's going to, that doesn't fall under the category of asmachta, and then he is going to have to pay if he does not work the land. So that, the Gemara says, is the difference between our case and the case later on. You see the top toasters over here, $9. Complimentary discussion over here to that on Sanhedrin in the third parak regarding what the definition of asmachta is. If you read our Gemara and you looked at what our Gemara defines as an asmachta, when something is in your control, so that sounds like it's not going to be an asmachta, like the case of the sharecropper. When something is not within your control, so that's like the case of the wine and the purchasing of the wine, so that would fall under the category of asmachta. And that's what it's seems very clear from our Gemara that that's the conclusion, and as is noted by over here in our Tosfos, that doesn't seem to conform to Rashi's opinion back in Sanhedrin in the third perek, and it becomes a very big discussion. Meaning, the Gemara over there talks about gambling. Is gambling fall under the category of asmachta, yes or no? The Gemara over there has a debate between Amoraim, but within the opinion of Rav Sheshis over there in the Gemara, Rav Sheshis says that gambling is not an asmachta. Why is gambling not an asmachta? And why is it that if you gamble, so the winnings is yours, and it's not considered that he didn't mean to give the money over to you? So over there, Rashi says, you know why? Because it's not in your control. The exact opposite of what our Gemara over here is saying. Meaning, because it's not in your control, so therefore it's not going to be an asmachta. Our Gemara seems to indicate just the opposite. Okay. Much discussion. We're going to continue on in the Gemara. Amar Rava. We're on the very top of Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph. Okay, good. Very top of Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, Amar Rava. Hani Beit Lasa Diavilei Zizel Lemizman Lehu Amidi V'Zavon Lechad Minayu Zavon Lekulu. Okay, we're now again talking about somebody who was given money. Over here, the buyers are a group. And the buying group all contributed money to the shliach in order for him to take advantage of some sort of buying opportunity. And now he was given the money, as we'll see in just a moment. They was given the money collectively. And so now when he makes a purchase, if he makes a purchase for one, he makes a purchase for all. Since all the money was given to him collectively, so therefore he can't say that he bought for only one of the members of the buying group. And the Gemara over here makes what would seem to be an obvious point, but we'll make it anyway. So, that's only if each member of the buying group didn't wrap up their money, put a wrap around the money saying, this is my money. Meaning that when they pool their money together, so then, when you buy, when the shliach buys, he's buying on behalf of all three. But if each person, when giving the money to the shliach, wrapped up his money and with a sign saying, "This is my money, purchase it with my money." So now, as he goes and he buys, so whoever's money he uses, obviously, is going to be the buyer of that item. Next, Amra Papi Mishmei Rava Hai Situmata Kanya. A situmta will create a kinyan. We need a definition. We turn to Rashi. Rashi writes, Chosem Sheroshmim Hachenvanim Alachavios. There's a big seller of wine, and the barrels themselves are very big as well. The buyer comes in to the seller and just simply puts a note, right, signs on the barrel, saying this barrel is sold to so-and-so. So chosim shiroshim and chedvanim al chavish ayin shalokhim har bebiachan uminichim osam beotzer habaalim umolichim osam achas achas limkor lechanus. So these big barrels are right now being held. They're eventually going to be taken to the market in order to be sold. Veroshim osam ledas shekol harishunin nimkaros. Okay, and so basically all you did was sign on a barrel, put a seal on the barrel saying that you intend on buying this. Now, what are normally the rules of Kenyan? Meshicha. Meshicha becomes the rule of Kenyan. Over here, wasn't a Meshicha. Okay, and yet, what the Gemara is teaching us is that this is considered a Kenyan. Now, lamai hilchasa. Now, the Gemara says the Kenyan, to what degree? So, Rav Chaviva Amar Lemekne Mamish, Rav Chaviva says, bonafide Kenyan. Now, even though generally speaking, bonafide Kenyan requires Meshicha, but over here, the Meshicha, the whole purpose of Meshicha is to understand and acknowledge that I'm the buyer. It's a concretization of an acquisition. Over here, we're talking about a barrel. It's huge. I'm not going to take it. So what I'm going to do is, I put a roshin, I put a sign on the barrel, and that will substitute as a bona fide kinyan. Rabbanan Amr, the Chachamim say, no, the Kuli Allah Mishapara. No, the Gemara, the Chachamim say, not a Kenyan to that extent, but a Kenyan in terms of being now committed to the sale. If either member of the transactors back out of the sale, subject to the curse that we discussed in the fourth parak of Mishapara. And the Gemara says that as far as Allah is concerned, a Situmta, putting a Roshim on one of the barrels, creates a Kenyan, but not a full-fledged Kenyan. Only that now both of us are committed to the sale, and if either party were to leave, subject to Mishapara. Over Asr Denagu Lemikne Mamishkanu. The Gemara says, however, Minagamakam, if Minagamakam is to buy it, so, and this is a means of Kenyan, so then this becomes a means of Kenyan. Okay. We now go back to our Mishnah. Remember, in the Mishnah we talked about forward contracting. So what you're going to do is you're going to put the money, and then you're going to get the product at a later point in time. The Mishnah says it's fine, but with only one, with one of two conditions are met. One is that the market price is set, or two, yeshlo, he actually has it on his possession. Amarav. Now, in our Mishnah, the Mishnah treated us to a bit of a chiddush, which is that he currently does have it. You are forward contracting for the item, but he has it in an underdeveloped stage. And so, is that fulfill the requirement of Yeshlo? From our Mishnah, with all the examples, five Mishnahs, if I remember correctly, given in our Mishnah, the answer continuously was yes, yes, and yes. Even though the processing hasn't been done, if you want to forward contract on it, and he has it, even in a, even not yet in the finished process stage, you that still is a legitimate forward contract. And our discussion, basically to the bottom of the Amud over here, is how many stages away from finished is it considered a satisfaction of this requirement of Yeshlo? Amarav mechusar shtayim posek shalosh ena posek. So Rav says, if you are two steps removed from finished product, fine. That fulfills the requirement of Yeshlo. And therefore you can put down money for a forward contract. But if we are three steps from finished product, so that's too far away, and that doesn't satisfy the requirement of Yeshlo, and therefore you cannot forward the money. Shmuel Amar Bide Adam Afilo Mea Poseg, Bide Shemaim Afilo Achas Eno Poseg. Shmuel says, look, if we are early in the manufacturing stage, and we have 100 steps to go until we get to the end, as long as there are 100 man-made steps, so then it's fine, right? Like kind of like what we just said a moment ago in the Gemara, it's Biyado. However, if one of the stages required in order to get to the end of manufacturing is something that is not up to you but up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we'll give examples in just a moment, so then no. Then we are, even if it's one, but then we're too far away from the finished product, meaning because we need now nature to intervene, so then no. So that does not satisfy the requirement of Yeshlo. So for Rav, two steps, not no more than two steps. For Shmuel, as many steps, as long as it's all man-made steps. Okay, to none. And now, from this point going forward, I'm only going to read the Gemara, translate the Gemara. I don't know any of the stages of manufacturing regarding any of these products that we're talking about. I'm perfectly trusting the Gemara and everything the Gemara is going to say over here. Like, you know, I teach Talmud for a living. So, you'll bear with me as the Gemara now is going to go through every step in the process. Tanan, posik imo al hagadish. So the Gemara says, you can make a forward contract on the harvest, on the wheat. Now, the Gemara says, at this point in time, when you're putting the money down for the forward contract, you know what we're missing? We're missing Mishta b'cham elamevish, drying it out in the sun. Ula meidash, and disha, and threshing. And midra, and winnowing. So the Gemara says, so that's three steps. Now remember, for Rav, that's one too many. In other words, you can only forward contract if there are two steps, but over here we got three. So how can you put down the money at such an early stage, according to Rav? So the Gemara says, Kigon deshad becham aviyavish. The Gemara says, okay, so we're already past the drying stage and we only have two more steps to go. Okay. Ula shmol damar bideshamayim afilachas and a posek v'amachusa midra di bideshamayim hu. Now, according to Shmuel, we have a problem because winnowing, what do you need for winnowing? You need wind. That is an act of God. So, and you can't control the wind. And so, according to Shmuel, we're too far away. You can't forward contract. So the Gemara says, Efsha b'navasa. So the Gemara says, well, you could do winnowing without wind. You take a sieve and you winnow using a sieve. Okay, so possible. Next, Alavid of Eshalanavim, we're not talking about buying the wine, but right now it's just in the status of grapes. V'amechusa, the Gemara says, but don't we need Mechmar? The ripening. All right, the ripening of it. The yulele be matzarta, bringing it to the press, and meidash, and threshing, and mingad. Right, that is transferring of the wine into the barrels. So the Gemara says, so that is now four steps. So the Gemara says, "Kidni Rabbi Chia, al hakomer shel zaysim, hachanami al hakomer shel anavim." So the Gemara says, "Okay." So basically, we're talking about a scenario in which the buyer gets involved in some of these steps. So that basically, we can whittle it down to two. So the Gemara says, "Va'amachusar tlas." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, but even if the buyer is getting involved in one step, remember we counted four. Four minus one is three. For Rav, that's one too many." So the Gemara says, "Ba'aser du zaven hu denagid." So the Gemara says, "Fine." So we're talking about where the buyer is involved in two of the last steps. So therefore, from the buyer's standpoint, we're only two steps removed. Okay. The alamit amatan shel zaysim. Now we're talking about buying olive oil. Right now, it's only olives, and you could front the money and you could forward contract on the purchase of oil, even though right now it's just olives. So the Gemara says, "Hamachutz." Now over here, once again, what do we need? Mechmar v'yulah beidape. Need the olives need to ripen. They need to be taken to the press. Lemeidash. They need to be threshed. Lemingad. They need to be transferred over into another vat. Four steps removed from becoming olive oil. How can you forward contract? We're too far ahead, according to Rav. So Tini Rabbi Chia, al kamer shel zaysim. So the Gemara says, okay, so the buyer's involved in one of those. But again, four minus one is only three. So Tlas ba'asra, I'm sorry, Eka Tlas ba'asra da'u dezavin, ahu mangid. So the Gemara says, okay, he's doing the last two steps, the buyer. So therefore, from his perspective, they're only two steps removed from where he gets involved. Al ha beitzim shel yotzer. We now talk about pottery. We're talking about buying pottery. Right now, the pottery has not been made. They're just bowls of pottery. So you're doing is you're forwarding the money. Right now, it's a bowl of pottery, and he's going to make it into kalim. Again, same question. Aren't we too early? To forward contract? Amai v'amechusar lefufe v'yavushe. So we need to work the pottery. You need to dry it. Eyula asuna, putting in the oven. Misraf, you need to burn it. Lemefak, I don't know. Take it out, I guess. Yeah. Okay, that's one, two. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's 5 steps, and you're forward contracting. So the Gemara says, "Kagon demalafafa via vishu." The Gemara says, "Okay, steps 1 and 2 are already taken care of. Like a talas, okay, but still that leaves us 3 steps. According to Rav, that's too many. Basro do the oven who the mayfuck. The buyer is the one who takes it out of the oven." So from his perspective, only 2 steps removed. Everyone basically understand the okay. It's the same thing. Just you know, v'al hasid mishi yishkeenu b'kivshan, and as far as the limestone after it is in the oven. Okay, so some sort of utensil made with the mineral. So the Gemara says, v'amechusar mikla, you need to burn it. V'afuki, you need to remove it. Umeida, can reduce it to powder. So the Gemara says that's 3 steps. So the buyer is the one who reduces it down to powder. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says now according to Shmuel, 100 steps as long as they're man-made steps. So the Gemara says, yeah, so according to Shmuel, so we're talking about where it was placed into the oven, after that point in time, so then it would be the buyer can buy. V'ala beitzim shol yotzer. Okay, let's pause. Let's pause over here. Tana Rabbanan, we're going to start tomorrow on the bottom of the Amud. Okay, quick recap. Today, it was like, I counted. It was like almost a dozen like short punctuated points regarding ribbis today. An Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, we did 4 of them. We did 5 of them. An Ayin Gimel Amud Beis, we did another 5. We talked a little bit today about Asmachta and committing yourself to buying wine, to working a field. In one case, your commitment is binding. In another case, your commitment is not binding. The difference is Biado versus Eino Biado. Okay, our Gemara seems to strongly indicate that if it's something that is not in your control, that like the buying of wine, that falls under the category of asmachta. Again, as we pointed out, not to seem to go in conjunction with the Gemara in Sanhedrin regarding Rashi's definition of gambling. That's a big discussion. Being sent to buy something by a buying group, you're buying on behalf of the whole group unless the monies are divided. And then forward contracting, which is okay if the market price is set, or if the seller at the time has a product on hand, even though it is not fully developed. Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, how many steps can we be removed from the finished product? Shmuel says 100, as many as you want, as long as it's bidei adam. Any step bidei shemayim? No. And according to Rav, you can only be 2 steps removed. And what we did then is we went through every case in the Mishnah where we found that we seem to be more than 2 steps removed, and basically what we did every time is that we shrunk it for Rav to 2 steps.